You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
For me, anyways, it's a pretty privileged view, but the pandemic was, you know, this opportunity to stop the touring cycle, which obviously we love touring, but it was really an opportunity to get a few things sorted. And I think including that was my health a little bit, being on the road so long, you know, touring for several months a year for about 5 years, I just kind of let things lapse a little bit. So when all the gyms shut down in March 2020, I've never really ran before, but because I was really into weightlifting and that sort of thing, I started running, and then I kind of didn't stop running. And now I do. Now I've sort of gotten into ultra marathons and that sort of thing. So I've become a really boring person. Everything that made up my personality has just kind of washed away, and I've become this guy that runs now.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to rate it and write a review. Now, why do I want you to do that? Well, you have to imagine that when someone is looking for a new podcast to listen to, what do they do? They scroll down, they look at those reviews. If those reviews are favorable and they say that my podcast is amazing, that I have the best guests, that I'm a great, insightful host, that I ask great questions, well, they might just give that podcast a chance. So by you rating the podcast, or even better, by writing a review, you might actually be the person that helps sway someone's decision to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, and that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today's episode was recorded at this month's Thirsty Thursday virtual hang. You should have been there. It was an absolute blast. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 356 with Jordan James of Disentomb.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I am very stoked to be back with Jordan James of Disentomb. Jordan, it's been a hell of a long time. Little did we know when we sat down together in the fall of 2019 that a whole global pandemic would keep us apart for this long, that we wouldn't be able to hang out, we wouldn't be able to drink beer at St. Buck as we did when I recorded episode 88 with you. Let's dance into a very simple question to start. Jordan, how are you doing?
Aside from technical difficulties, pretty good. I'm on paternity leave at the moment, so my wife and I welcomed our second child into the world 2 weeks ago, so I'm on holidays at the moment, which is, you know, it doesn't feel like holidays because it's a lot of sleepless nights, but other than that, working on New Disentomb, getting ready to release that, so between fatherhood and brutal death, you know, going pretty good.
You're living on fumes. I know what those first weeks are like. It's so difficult to be a father, and here you are in Vox and Hops, and you're in Australia. Here I am in Montreal. Everyone else joining here right now that I can see right now are in North America. So it's nighttime for us, so we're drinking beer, but you're being a trooper, and you're having a beer right now, which I love. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. What are you drinking right now? What are we sharing virtually today, Jordan?
I'm drinking a Burley Twisted Palm by Burley Brewery. So it's a brewery that's right near my drummer's place on the Gold Coast. So it's a tropical pale ale.
Nice.
So it's quite refreshing. So it's not too bad to have in the morning, actually.
I was just going to say, it's basically like orange juice. I appreciate the sacrifice. From experience, it's best to stop after that one, if not... the day keeps going.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'll switch back to tea after.
This is a special brew from Ghost Town Brewing that I've been looking forward to drinking. It's called Zest for Death. It is from their special barrel age series. It's super fucked up. I really, really am very excited for it. They got to Californian kumquats, grapefruit skin. It's just... juices from the flesh of both. It's been got mixed fermentation, oak age. Very stoked to try this. Massive shout out to Jameson Kester for hooking me up with this one when he hooked me up with some of the Devastation on the Nation brews that he sent me. It was awesome. I'm very stoked. I'm gonna crack this, and I would love to hear about the shittiest question that I'm going to ask you from here on out. It's going to get more fun, but it's the question that I have to ask everyone since it's been so long we haven't hung out. How the hell did you cope with the glorious years of 2020, 2021, and most certainly, hopefully not, the rest of 2022? How have you been coping during these wonderful, wonderful times?
So I think for me anyways, it's a pretty privileged view, but the pandemic was, you know, this opportunity to stop the touring cycle, which obviously we love touring, but it was really an opportunity to get a few things sorted. And I think including that was my health a little bit, being on the road so long, you know, touring for several months a year for about 5 years, I just kind of let things lapse a little bit. So when all the gyms shut down in March 2020, I've never really ran before, but because I was really into weightlifting and that sort of thing, I started running, and then I kind of didn't stop running, and now I do. Now I've sort of gotten into ultra marathons and that sort of thing, so I've become a really boring person. everything that made up my personality has just kind of washed away, and I've become this guy that runs now. So it's other than that, I spent a lot of 2020 because my work didn't shut down. I work in the media, so obviously it was quite busy for us, but working from home. And just really got into running, got into really focusing in on myself a little bit. You know, it sounds super cliche, but getting into yoga, getting into meditation, and actually sort of it was a really good opportunity for me to reset. And I think all the guys in Disentomb found the same thing, where we've sort of been able to refocus on ourselves. And now it's sort of going back in. Now everything's opened up again in Australia for the most part. You know, we can tour internationally again, and getting into the swing of the things. Yeah, it's just now juggling, you know, our new lives that we've had to build with I guess, our old lives, which was, you know, touring and living sort of a pretty crazy lifestyle.
It's a baffling thing to have one identity, and then all of a sudden it's like, it's taken away from us, it's gone. But good for you. You could have gone either way. I've spoken to people that have gone one way or the other way. You went towards the healthy route, the getting your angst out, not on stage, but through running and health and meditating and yoga. And that's commendable. It's to find the balance between the two once you're out there. That's
I should say there was definitely a point where I think the first 2 weeks of lockdowns and everything, because the bottle shops never closed. Like, you could buy alcohol still. And I don't know if that's just an Australian thing, but you know, you could still buy alcohol at all hours. But, for the first 2 weeks, my wife and I were getting a bottle of red wine every night and sort of just, you know. And then I was sort of noticing, I was looking at my clock every day at about 5, being like, oh, you know, it's wine time. And then after about 2 weeks, when I started getting sort of, because I've never been a big drinker, but when I started noticing I was getting those sort of cravings a bit, because I think I do have an addictive personality. When I started getting those cravings, that's kind of when I'm like, oh, shit, I need to stop this. And that's when I sort of just started running instead and tried to get addicted to something that wasn't, you know, going to make me feel like shit in the morning.
Absolutely. And it makes you feel amazing running. You chase that runner's high, I've heard.
It's definitely a real thing. Yep.
And then you have to run farther and farther to keep getting that same level of exhilaration. It's an addictive personality thing for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Because I started running, I could only run 200 meters when I first started. And I was, I really couldn't run. I've never ran in my entire life until like just before I turned 30. Could only run 200 meters. And then that was in 2020. And then last year I ran my first 100 kilometer, which is 80 miles. And then,
didn't you run something like overnight in the night? Am I crazy?
Yeah, I ran for 15 hours, from 7 a.m. until 10 p.m. So, I mean, it's kind of like, I guess, you know, don't just get into metal, get into brutal death metal, you know, don't get into running, get into ultra marathons. I guess, I know, my wife, when I started running, she's like, oh, you're going to take this to some sort of stupid level. And, you know, she was right.
Well, cheers to that. Cheers to healthy decisions versus unhealthy ones, despite how much they hurt in the morning sometimes. Ooh, this smells amazing on the nose. The zesty, oaky color's gorgeous, light yellow hay color. tart. Tart as hell. Woody. Very cool. Very cool. Zest for Death. Love it. Love it. Ghost Town Brewing. If you can get it, people. A question I didn't ask you last time, which I always end up asking, is the soundtrack of your youth. When you're growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Honestly, it was pretty stock standard in terms of, I'm not sure if anyone outside of Australia has heard of Jimmy Barnes. No, Jimmy Barnes is like a real Australian sort of, he's like mainstream AC/DC.
Really?
Yeah. So it was a lot of Jimmy Barnes. It was a lot of Dire Straits as well, you know, that sort of thing. And my dad was really into Pink Floyd. So that was kind of what was my soundtrack growing up. And I guess, you know, things like AC/DC. And then I think it was when I was around 8 or 9, because I have two older brothers. And that's when, you know, they were around and, you know, they were sort of 15, 16 around the year 2000, 2001. And then naturally System of a Down sort of started being played in my house, and Korn and Marilyn Manson and that sort of thing. And that's naturally where I sort of gravitated to.
Who got into the Matty Ways first? Cause I know that he's your biggest inspiration, influence. Did you get more brutal than your brothers, or did they go there and show it to you?
No, that they kind of stopped around the System of a Down phase, and then it was because Jake and I lived in a small town together. Jake, the guitarist of Disentomb, we lived in a town of about 4,000 people, and he had an older brother who is the same age as my middle brother, and we both were in a System of a Down, like, you know, around the ages of, you know, 10 or 11. And then we just started sort of getting into together. This is back in the LimeWire days. We just started downloading like Cannibal Corpse. And I think we were 13 when we first heard Brodequin and started downloading, and just sort of, it became this sort of search for what's the most heaviest, disgusting, most disgusting thing in the world. And then I think it was Jake who discovered Disgorge and then showed it to me. And then it was a really weird thing where we were in this mall when I was like 14, and there was like a shop selling bootleg shirts, and there was a Disgorge Cranial Impalement shirt. This is like in this random mall. I don't even know how they would have had a Disgorge shirt. And we ended up buying it like together, because we couldn't even, like, as ridiculous as it sounds, we couldn't even read the Disgorge logo.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a guy with a knife going through his head. So we're like, oh, that is sick. And then it ended up being, you know, we were wearing it around, not knowing what it is. We're like 14, 15, so it's ridiculous. But it ended up being, you know, one of our favorite bands and literally one of the most influential albums in the genre, Cranial Impalement. So that's kind of the weird sort of way we got into Disgorge. And they're still my top-tier favorite band.
Yeah. I know. I love it. I love it. You bought it together. Did you each buy one, or did you share a shirt?
There was only one. It's like sharing it together. We're in the city for the day, and then we literally went back to our country town of 4,000 people, and yeah, it was weird times. It was the early 2000s.
Was there a schedule? How did you organize?
there wasn't a particular schedule. I think it was, I think it stayed at Jake's place.
What was your family's reaction to you getting into much more extreme music?
I think my parents were always very sort of supportive and open. So they didn't really care too much. I think I can remember one or two conversations being like, oh, you know, they were kind of weirded out by the music. And I think when I started trying to do vocals around the age of 15 in the shower, they were sort of, you know. My vocals definitely got better when I moved out at 17 because, you know, mm-hmm. I didn't have my dad knocking on the door telling me to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
it's a really important thing for people learning vocals to you have to not be shy. And it's such a hard thing to do when you know people are listening and you're learning, right? Unless you just have that personality that can just pull it off.
Yeah. And if you have, like, you know, people telling you to not do it, it's definitely, it can be definitely a bit difficult. Or if you have neighbors that might call the cops on you or something.
So you go through all this, you end up, you know, this Entombed starts. How you obviously finished your schooling because you work in the media. I know you're a journalist. So you did the right thing. What do your parents think now that you obviously have succeeded, toured the world for 5 years straight, the father of two, an accomplished journalist. How do they feel about you as an extreme vocalist? So how do they feel about extreme music now?
I think it first dawned on, like, I remember the conversation I had with my mum where, you know, she was aware we were playing shows in Brisbane and, like, we would, like, which we all moved to study at university. And then we eventually would play interstate shows when we were, like, 18 or 19. And then I think it first dawned on my mum that this is a real thing when we did our first European tour in 2011. Because I remember her being like, you know, asking, are you serious? Like, you know, are you actually doing, like, is it actually going ahead? And then once we actually went over there, I think it first dawned on my mum that, you know, there's actually a crowd that listens to it, that there's actually a following to the genre. And then it eventually turned into, like, all mums, you know, mum doing those cringe sort of proud of my son posts, like posting photos of me looking like an absolute, like, you know, pulling faces on stage and, you know, doing whatever I do on stage, posting those photos and saying, my son's going over to Europe today, you know, bragging to all of her friends. So she's very supportive.
It's important, and it's hard when you're young to I don't want to say do the right thing, but to do the backup plan thing, the safety net thing. That's the right thing. It's hard to do the safety net thing of getting a career and pursuing your art at the same time. It's something that is, as an artist, is extremely difficult to swallow. But if you can do it and you have that mental capacity to juggle many things, I encourage everyone to do it. But it's not easy. Was there moments for you where it was like, I want to be an artist. I want to go tour. And there was the obligations of finishing schooling. Was that difficult? I remember for myself, it was a juggle.
So we did our first European tour in 2011 after I finished university. So I finished university and then I actually just sort of had a gap year working as a forklift driver in a factory, just sort of finding out what I wanted to do, if I wanted to use my degree. And then we did our first European tour. And then we came back and I started my career in the media. And then it was actually a really difficult juggling act for essentially the entire time we've been touring, where my company and the people I report to have been very supportive over the years. And I would use all my leave, all my holidays to go tour. So it was, there were times of extreme stress where I'd be trying to work really hard and I'd work extra hard when I'm back from tour. And then going away on tour using all my holidays, you know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it unless you think you're capable of it or if you want to do it. But it was extremely stressful in some of the times, you know, just, you know, being able to make both of those things work at the same time, especially if you have a partner as well, you know. So that's why, you know, it was much easier to get the start going in early 20s before everything kicked off. And now that's, I think, the hardest thing that's going to be going back into it, where we're in that next phase of our lives where, you know, we've got children and stuff now. And, you know, that last tour I did in 2019, I didn't have a daughter. I came back home and 5 days later, my daughter was born.
That's true. That I remember. It's you're going to miss a lot of things. And it's something that, as an artist, we have to accept, which sucks.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. So we actually have our first tour. We've played a few festivals during the pandemic around Australia, but we have our first tour, an Australian tour with Defeated Sanity, and it's only 1 week, but that'll be good to ease us back into it while juggling everything else, you know.
Absolutely. It's a monster of a tour. Defeated Sanity, Wraith, from July 7th to the 14th. Bunch of dates. Australia, rocking it. Your first time away from your baby. Your first time away from the kids in general. Are you ready for that? I wanted to do a whole segment later on about being a metal dad. and the balancing act here. I guess this whole episode is basically going to be about balance. Here we go. I'm liking this thematic that's come up. The balance of being an extreme metal father. Are you prepared for that? Luckily, we have the world of technology at our fingertips where we can just FaceTime and be in the house for a second. Albeit it's extremely difficult and completely not the same, but it is a special little way for us to connect with our family, even if we're away. Are you prepared for missing things and being away and finding that balance?
Yeah, I think I'm mentally prepared for it. But I think just leaving, you know, I think the biggest thing is probably dealing with the guilt of being away, from, you know, because when you leave, you understand the load is going to be extra on your partner. And you will miss things. So I think naturally that's going to come with its fair share of guilt and, you know, and that sort of thing. But thankfully, what will make it easier is all the guys in Dysentum are, you know, literally my best friends, you know, and it's never a depressing time to say the least. So, you know, I think that will help definitely. And the guys in the band are, you know, quite, you know, involved and try to be involved with my kids, so it's they'll be quite understandable as well.
It's a whole family, and I love it. I love a family band situation that becomes a part of the family. It's a special thing to have, so you guys should keep embracing that. You guys have been busy. The Decaying Light was a massive success. People were freaking out. It's so good. You're writing a new EP. What can you tell us about this? I've seen nothing online, so I feel like we got some breaking stuff here. What's going on with this new EP for Dysentum?
Yeah, look, it's only four tracks, so it's a really short release. But it's the first time the majority of the music has actually been written by our bassist, Adrian Capoletti. And it's, I would say, it's some of our most accomplished work. It's definitely a step forward from The Decaying Light and Misery. It's just, it is a progression. I just finalized vocal patterns and lyrics just earlier this week, actually. And it's going to be called Nothing Above. And, yeah, it's the artwork is going to be done by Nick Keller, who did The Decaying Light and Misery. You know, he's a fantastic artist. And, you know, everyone says this is our most accomplished work, but I think anyone who listens to this will hear, you know, if you're a fan of Dysentum and you've listened to Dysentum previously, you will hear elements of Dysentum, but you'll also, it's much more expansive, and it's still got gutturals over it, so people will still be stoked. you know, it still sounds like I'm vomiting over some really technical music, so it's, I think people will like it. Well, to be honest, I don't give a fuck if people don't like it, but I'm kind of beyond that. But
it's yours, own it. I am in the process right now of writing vocal patterns and lyrics.
How do you find writing vocal patterns?
It's tedious, but I'm really, really lucky to have Christian Donaldson in the band, and he definitely works with people all the time, so he knows what is redundant and what is fresh, and he's extremely difficult on me. For myself, I need to really just comprehend the music first. It's extremely difficult, honestly. Where is the one? Why is there only 3.5 this time? Where is the rest of it? It's extremely complex stuff, the new Cryptopsy that we're working on right now. How do you basically go about structuring your songs and go about creating patterns for yourself, the importance of lyrics? We spoke about that last time, about the importance of lyrics, even though no one can understand what the hell we're saying sometimes.
Look, admittedly, as a non-musical person, I'm completely, I'm the least talented person in the band by far. I can't play an instrument at all. As you saw from the technical difficulties, I have some issues with mastering a laptop sometimes. So understanding the technicality of our music is a real challenge sometimes, and that's where I do need the help of Jake, a guitarist, or our bassist Adrian to sort of really sit down with me and go through it with me. And then once I'm really sit down and listen to it and get a feel for it, then I can kind of hear the phrasings and how it's going to go. And the way I write, it's vocal patterns first. You know, I go through how the syllables are going to be, and then I write lyrics and match the lyrics over it. That's kind of what works best for me, to be honest, rather than trying to write lyrics and fit them into songs.
It's so hard. I've tried both ways. And even with this one that I'm writing right now, which is a full length, I have done some where it's the lyrics and I go and attack it and it doesn't feel as natural. So I stopped doing that and I kept going forward with the let's dissect these patterns and see what fits. But really just comprehending the basics of what's going on in the song is definitely step one. And that just, it's massive amounts of listening. A trick that I've been doing, and it's the first time I'm doing this because of the podcast, is I use Reaper to edit all my shit. So I've been dropping the file, the song, into Reaper, and then I've been just slowing it down so I can actually hear the riff at a slower tempo so I can actually understand what the hell they're playing or count the amount of snare hits that Flo's doing or stuff like that. It's actually been really helpful. It's something that I've actually really enjoyed doing.
I've actually done the exact same thing where I've been using Reaper for the first time and just cutting the riffs up and listening to the riffs over and over again and just sort of having that on repeat. That's been really helpful.
That's a good idea too. That's a really good idea. I'm going to do that. I have 3-4 more songs to do. You mentioned Adrian wrote most of these 4 tracks. Is that because of the situation of the pandemic for him? He found himself in a situation where he could write and record. He was had more time on his hands. Well, what's the reason behind him writing more than previous releases?
I think it probably comes down to writing a little bit more because he has time on his hands. Jake, our guitarist, has sort of started his own career due to the pandemic. You know, he's really doing well in his job. Since everything shut down, he's, you know, excelling in his job. So I think Adrian does have a little bit more time on his hands, and it's just naturally came that way. The crazy thing is Adrian is such a masterful musician, and him and Jake's playing style are so similar that you can't hear too much of a difference. You can hear differences, but they are very similar in a lot of ways. And they're both influenced. You know, I think if you had, you could have the most technical guitarist in the world, but if they don't have the foundation musical influences, it's just going to sound completely different. But thankfully, Adrian literally has the same foundational musical influences as Disgorge, Immolation, Gore Guts, and with that Ulcerate sort of style, that naturally he's influenced by the same things as what Jake is, and so it comes out the same as well. And he kind of understands what we're doing.
When you understand what the essence of a band is, you're going to live within the realm of that band. It's so important for that, and it takes time. And that's what the difficult thing for Donaldson, Christian Donaldson, when he joined Cryptopsy was to claim the identity of Cryptopsy and make it his own, but still remaining within what Cryptopsy is. And he's definitely mastered that with the new stuff and with the Book of Suffering EPs. Shout out to you, Donaldson. You know I love you.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
We're gonna be like Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
I have a brand new segment. I've been dropping it in on every interview recently. It's about mental health. I would love to hear about what you do for yourself when you feel not well, when you feel like you need some help, when you're having a dark day. What do you do to cope with that? And then a secondary question is, when you feel like your friends are not doing well, how do you reach out to them and what do you say to them?
No, those are really good and important questions. And I think from the mental health perspective, it's understanding what sort of releases the pressure in your life. And for me, like that ended up becoming running, meditation. Like, you know, I'm going to be that guy that just talks about running, but you know, and a big thing for me as well is I go through bouts of deleting my social media where I just delete the apps off my phone. And it's not necessarily I'm addicted to posting but I'm addicted to just scrolling, doom scrolling. And I don't know if anyone else, like I figured a lot of other people do it, but I just find myself mindlessly going through it, and then I'm like, where did the last hour go? And then I just feel like absolute shit. And so I think some of the best things I've done for myself is when I've deleted it for a week, and you notice for the first day or so, you check your phone, and you automatically go to your app.
You know exactly where that button is, right? And it's not there.
and then you have to try and fill that gap of time with other stuff, whether it's reading or just, you know, going for a walk or something like that. But you know, I think for me, and I would recommend it to anyone, and you know, I honestly think if I can do it, someone who never had really run in their entire life, just start out running. Because if I go for a run for an hour or even half an hour, you know, that's half an hour I'm not on my phone. That's half an hour I'm not talking to anyone else, actually. And it's half an hour I'm just to my own thoughts. Or if I'm listening to music, it's an opportunity where I can listen to an album that I love, where I can really deep listen to it and focus on my breathing, and it can become quite meditative. So I think that's kind of what I do to sort of, because I think I am partial to feeling like, I think most people are, to feeling down about things. You know, everyone goes through the things. If it's lack of sleep or whatever, you can just, or if it's work stress, that sort of thing, you can feel it. And everyone does. So that's where I try to be super conscious and intentional about things that, you know, are good for me and are going to be good for me tomorrow and going to be good for me in a month from now. When it comes to dealing with friends who may be going through things, I think it's – well, one of the positives, I guess, around the pandemic is it's kind of broken down the stigma of just FaceTiming people.
That's true. Just take a shot at it, yeah.
Yeah, but for me it has anyways, where, you know, Disentomb, like the other guys in the band, we never really FaceTimed each other before the pandemic. And then now, you know, we are partial to having group calls and that sort of thing and just calling each other one-on-one. Because I think it's one thing to message each other and say, oh, you know, reach out if you need anything. But everyone knows when you're feeling absolutely fucked, the last thing you're probably going to do is reach out, even though you should. So I think just probably sporadic calling friends and sort of, you know, being a positive pest in a way. and I think being totally transparent with your feelings, like, you know, I'll tell the other guys in Disentomb and the other guys who I'm super close friends with that I love them, you know, like totally just be transparent with how you feel with one another. And I don't know, there's no simple solution to helping, you know, someone through their issues or, you know, to help sort of bring a bit of light into someone's life. But I guess for that, that's kind of what's helped so far for me.
The pandemic definitely showed us that we can't take anything for granted. So tell your friends you love them. Tell them how you feel about them. That's an important message. I like that. I think that it's very important to, you don't want people feeling alone when they are truly loved as we love our friends. So tell your friends you love them. I like that very much. I'd love to talk more about running. What would be some advice? You mentioned everyone should start running. What is the first step if someone's listening to this and they've been thinking about running? And coincidentally, I literally got new running shoes today. So talk to me about what steps should someone take if they want to start running.
I think that's a good start, getting proper shoes, and then just honestly going, just try and run 100 meters, and it's going to feel fucked. Your lungs are going to collapse. Like, I used to be a pack a day smoker when I was on tour, so like, yeah. So my lungs were just totally shot. So I think just try and do small incremental runs, and just up the distance every now and again, and don't, you know, don't try and get into it too hardcore from the beginning, because you're just going to not enjoy it, because the whole thing is trying to enjoy it. It's a really hard thing, because you're not going to enjoy something that makes it feel like you have a chest burster inside you. But it does get better, and, you know, the runner's high does actually exist. And I think a big thing is people probably are kind of a bit, like, I know this was for me anyways. I was in my head about, like, how I ran. Like, I was real self-conscious.
Like the way you looked while you ran?
The way I looked when I run and that sort of thing, which, you know, I don't know if anyone else feels like that, but I was like, and then I just got into this mindset, like, anyone who kind of is looking down on me for the way that I run or whatever, like, fuck them, they're a piece of shit. So I don't know, like, have a spiteful attitude when you go for a run and tell them.
You are the one going for a run and they're not, so.
Yeah, that's what I try to tell myself. But, yeah, try not to be self-conscious. Start slowly. Expect there to be a bit of pain. If there's too much pain, just maybe slow down a bit and, you know, try and enjoy it and look at it as an opportunity to listen to some albums in full, you know, or to create a killer playlist because, you know, we all listen to music when we drive or when we're online or, you know, whatever. But how often do we get an opportunity? Maybe other people do, but I don't get too much of an opportunity in my life to have a deep listen to albums that I really love or to sort of discover or rediscover albums that I haven't listened to in a while.
I was definitely going to ask, what do you listen to while you ran? That was my next question. So you beat me to it. Talk to me about what gets you going. What gets you through a 15-hour run? Now, are there any surprise albums that you wouldn't expect Jordan James of Disentombed to be listening to?
Oh, 100%. So I listen to a playlist that's curated by me and my mate, and it's literally, you know, it's literally like just really bad rap. So I love really, like, you know, just, you know, Brockhampton, Ray Shremmerd, Night Lovell, Migos. yeah, it's just a lot of, like, 2 Chainz, Kanye West, Maxo Cream, 21 Savage. You know, that's kind of my go-to just because I like running to a beat. And I also like sort of listening to a lot of stuff that I loved when I was, like, 11. So a lot of Slipknot, a lot of System of a Down. It, to be honest, it's really hard to run to Brutal Death.
Yeah.
That's the one time I don't want to listen to Brutal Death Metal is when I'm running. I want to listen to some, I don't know. And for example, when I'm saying, like, I love deep listening, I'll listen to, you know, all of Nirvana's discography. Or, that, you know, I have a pretty broad taste in music, so I'll listen to a whole bunch of different shit. But when I did the 15-hour run, for the first 7 hours, I didn't listen to music. I just sort of listened to my mind and just tried to sort of not rely on music to get me through it. And then when the pain started setting in where I felt like I couldn't run anymore, that's when I started introducing music. I try to listen to some podcasts, that sort of, you know, inspirational podcasts, as wanky as that sounds, you know, David Goggins and all that sort of thing. But, yeah, so I'll listen to a wide variety of things, whatever sort of my mood pulls me into at that point.
I love it. What's your dog's name?
That's Ronald, the sausage dog.
Excellent. I'm sure the listeners are curious.
Sausage dogs, Ronald and Penelope.
Two sausage dog, Ronald and Penelope. I like that. I have one last question for you before I turn you over to the Thirsty Thursday gang. I did not ask you last time. It's something that I started doing during the pandemic. It's the classic Vox and Hops wrap-up question. It probably doesn't happen to you anymore, but it most definitely used to happen to you when you're on tour. What is your hangover cure?
Probably a Denny's breakfast of some sort. That's, like, usually an easy go-to. But like I said earlier, I'm not that big of a drinker. Like, I've gone entire tours without drinking. You know, I just sort of made the sort of goal of not drink. You know, I was always super worried about getting sick and fucking up my vocals. So it was, you know, I was, as much as I'm a boring person after the pandemic, I was pretty boring beforehand too. So.
Boring, and then I don't agree with that. It's like the running. It's like the way you look while you run, the way you live your life. Fuck everyone else if they have any problem with the way you live your life. Thirsty Thursday gang, you know the drill. If you have any questions for Jordan James, the Disentomb, raise your digital hand and I shall call upon you. And Jordan will answer your question. As always, we have Phil Dervites of the Whispers from the Void podcast, who is going to ask the first question. Here we go. Go for it, Phil.
Hi. Hi, Jordan.
What's up? Hey, dude. How are you?
I'm good. So my question, I was thinking about it, like, when I was driving, and I was like, because I always ask question about, like, what tour you want to do with what band? So I'm like, if you have a tour to plan, you have to just make a tour, of every genre of what you want.
Okay.
What do you want for an artist as a headliner? Maybe two headliners, whatever, and a support act or two.
Okay, that's a really good question. So the headliner would be Tame Impala.
Ooh.
Second headliner would be Ulcerate.
Oh, yeah.
And then the supports would be Disgorge and Morbid Angel. Most part a pretty stock standard death metal tour other than Tame Impala. If you can get Tame Impala to agree with that and Disentomb will open, that'll be I'd love that.
You're just like doing like fucking death metal and you're like, okay, let's Tame Impala instead just to calm everyone up.
Yeah, everyone can chill out afterwards to Tame Impala. Yeah,
that'd that's be perfect. I would go to that tour for sure.
I definitely would too. I'll try and make it happen.
Perfect. Let's do it.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Thanks, Phil. The metal architect himself, Jerry Monk, go for it.
Well, he kind of answered my question earlier about the direction of the new album because, you know, the last couple have been kind of dissonant and atmospheric. So, but if you could, if you were stranded on a desert island, what is the one album you would take with you?
Probably related to the previous question, probably Tame Impala's Currents. That's just my all-time favorite album. Yeah, it just means a lot to me, that album. But if I can probably answer your previous one in terms of the new style of Disentomb, I would say the most—it's the most pointed lyrically in terms of, you know, all the other ones have been sort of a mix of myth, biblical stuff, and beasts, and this one's a lot more pointed around atheism, and point really sort of leaning into that a whole lot. There's still a lot of sort of dorky Lord of the Rings beast stuff in there, but there is a lot of a strong push towards talking about the themes of anti-theism and atheism, which is something, you know, I really enjoy reading and listening about. So I think when you read through the lyrics, you'll see a lot of that.
Was that easier because there's four songs to work with versus a whole album to like tie them all together into one thematic?
Yeah, definitely, because I think if you're writing 13 songs around one theme, and that theme is, you know, that there is no God, you know, it might become a little bit repetitive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you have four tracks, you can sort of break that off into four pillars. What does that mean, that there is no God? And it's much easier to sort of dissect and explore that a bit.
Very cool, very cool. Some bands have made whole careers out of there is no God, though, but I appreciate it. I like your approach. I like.
I can assure there's no song called Mad at God on there.
Brian, go for it.
COVID aside or the pandemic aside, as a band, are there any like situations or experiences you've had to deal with that you didn't expect when you started, you know, as a band or getting into being in a band, whether it's, you know, touring or management or venue, something happened, just something out of the blue you didn't think would be the way it was?
For us, anyways, it's been around probably negotiating, because I do a lot of the negotiating in terms of pay and that sort of thing. And I think it's building confidence over the years around what you're worth, because especially for the first, you know, half a decade even, you're kind of taking whatever you can get, and you feel really difficult. You feel it's a massive challenge, I feel, around valuing your art. As much as you kind of, like, we know we play ridiculous music that sounds like static to 99% of people in the world. But it's also understanding there is value to your music and there's value to your time that you're putting into it. And I think there probably is a little bit of a mindset within the brutal death or death metal community that, you know, if you ask for your fair share, you're somehow a sellout or that sort of thing. But I think just negotiating what you're worth is probably something, you know, we never had in mind when we started the band and even when we started touring internationally. But then, you know, I guess working out the logistics of being away on tour for 16 weeks and and doing that over, say, Europe and the US, just navigating all the logistics of that and actually working it out, you know, what we should be getting or what we feel we should be getting and making sure that matches the demand for promoters and that sort of thing. That's probably a little bit of a, that was just something we never had any sort of insight into going into it. You know, we just had to learn as we went. I'm sure like everyone else.
It's so difficult. So we talked about the last time we were together, so much difficult for bands from Australia. So far away, you guys end up leaving for 16 weeks, as you mentioned, which means you're hitting both a U.S. tour, popping up into Canada for some dates, a full European tour back-to-back most of the time. What a commitment. And it's the finances have to be there. If not, you know, leaving the family at home, leaving the job at home, taking your vacation to do it, it has to be worth it. So you're 100% right, arguing for your worth. Colby.
How's it going, guys? I want to say I love your band, dude. Fucking awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Hopefully we get to see you grace North America soon enough again. Because I know it's been since 2019, I think, right?
Bloodletting North America, yes.
You touched on this a little bit. I don't know if I missed it at all, but I was curious how you got into wanting to be a metal vocalist besides just singing in your shower when you were 15 years old.
It was sort of the last opportunity because Jake started playing guitar when he was 12. I bought a bass guitar and, you know, learned pretty quickly that I sucked at it. And, you know, if I sucked at bass, I wasn't going to be good at drums. So I started making dumb noises with my voice. And thankfully, you know, I was able to do it to a passable level that I was able to hang out with some very talented people. And naturally it came from, you know, I think with my personality type, I am a bit of an attention seeker in a way. I naturally gravitated towards wanting to be a front man. And, you know, I think seeing, you know, video clips of Morbid Angel or Cannibal Corpse, you know, seeing someone like Corpse Grinder on stage when you're 14 and being like, oh, I want to be that dude, you know. I want to have a neck thicker than my head and sound like a demon from hell. Like, you know, that just naturally appealed to me. And so I just started doing it. And thankfully I was able to do something that's passable that, you know, and hang out with some really talented people that meant I could do it in a band.
It's good advice, people. If you can't play an instrument, make sure your friends are super talented and learn how to scream. Chris Potter, go for it.
You mentioned you don't like brutal death metal for your running. I'm a powerlifter myself. I'm just curious, like, A, are you going to ever get back into weightlifting? And B, back when you were weightlifting, what was your playlist like?
So I've recently started getting back into weightlifting just to help with my running. But, like, actually, I started deadlifting again just, you know, earlier this week. I did deadlifts for the first time in ages. And when I was, you know, lifting a lot more weights and probably doing a little bit more powerlifting, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I probably was listening to a lot more brutal death metal. Well, I think my music playlists change with whatever I'm doing. But, you know, I love listening to Defeated Sanity or Disgorge when I'm lifting. Especially if there's just a certain song and there's, like, if I'm going in for a deadlift, and there's a certain bit that I want to lift to, you know, I love just choosing a song. But otherwise, I like listening to a lot of hardcore while I lift. And, you know, they're a super hype band, but I love Knock Loose. And I love lifting to Knock Loose. I've started lifting a lot recently. You know, in the last few weeks, I've been lifting a lot more and just trying to get that balance between lifting and running, because I don't want to just, you know, be a guy that runs a bit, because I was into weightlifting for so many years and that was a big part of my identity for so many years. And it has felt weird to sort of transition into, you know, not being that guy that, you know, was kind of a bit bigger and that sort of thing. That so I'm trying to sort of get a healthy balance with that again as well. It's a good question though.
Love it. Love the balance, the thematic of balance coming up through this. A question for myself, with the help of the Metal Architect. Why has it not happened? That's probably because it's very complicated, but like a full Australian lineup, U.S. tour, a European tour. Obviously, Psycroftic comes to mind. What other bands should be there? Jerry, help me with this. What other bands? There's Werewolves, Werewolves are also Psycroptic, so that doesn't help, really. Yeah.
Well, take a break in between, like Disentomb, Psycroptic, and then a band in between.
You know, if it wasn't just strictly death metal, like they are sort of towards the death metal side of deathcore, but you could have a Versions Crown. Mm. They're a great band.
Yeah.
There's a band called Resin Tomb. The guy is also in Siberian Hell Sounds and like a million other fucking bands. You could have them as well.
Yeah, we're good. We're good friends with those dudes. We played a show with them last year in July, actually. So, there's definitely enough quality in Australia where you could organize it. It would just be a matter of being really intentional about booking something like that. And I think, you know, if you had a band like, or if you had bands like Psycroptic and Disentomb with the idea of, you know, going out there with maybe two others, you could definitely do it for sure. And I think there probably needs to be something like that, you know, like to fly the flag a bit. Or maybe you could have sort of Australia and New Zealand, considering we're pretty much the same country.
You could call it like C is not a swear word or something across, across North America or something.
Down under, up over.
Just a thought. Jordan, thank you so much for hanging out with me, the Thirsty Thursday gang. This is always a blast. I'm so stoked to have you back on the podcast. Basically almost 300 episodes later. So damn cool. Can't wait to hang out again in the flesh. Looking forward to it already. I'm very, very excited about the new EP, Nothing Above. It's going to be massive. When can people maybe think of it hearing some of this new material?
We're hoping to release a single sort of by September, October, with a release later this year through Unique Leader Records.
Hell yeah.
It'll be out all through our socials and that sort of thing. Just want to say congratulations, man. Last time we actually spoke, you know, episode 88, it's been great to see, you know, you thrive and not only survive through the pandemic, but thrive, and to see Vox and Hops become such a massive thing, and, you know, and that you've got a community built. It's been awesome to see.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for hanging out with me. Massive cheers. As always, Thirsty Thursday gang, unmute yourselves. Make some noise for Jordan James, Disentomb. We had a blast. You should have been here with us, everyone. You could have made noise right now, too. Here we go. Make some noise. 3, 2, 1. Thank you. Cheers.
Yeah.
Hey, boy.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right today. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an awesome Thirsty Thursday virtual hang. What a blast this was. I love reconnecting with Vox and Hops alumni and seeing how they've been. Because, you know, we talk, we hang out a lot, and then, boom, we're separated for 2 years, basically, because of a global pandemic. We kept in touch a little bit here and there, but it's nothing like sitting down and sharing a beer with someone and actually having a conversation. Such a blast. Very excited for that brand new Disentomb material that's coming up. You should get excited for it as well. Massive cheers to Jordan. I want to start running. You're inspiring me. I'm going to hit the pavement, and I will be thinking of you as I do it. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can get it on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a month that contains all of the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You'll get to see which episodes I've released recently. You'll get to see which episodes I have coming up. You'll get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently. You'll get to see any information about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public. And trust me, I always have a bunch of things going on behind the scenes. You also get to see which albums Jerry Monk, the Metal Architect himself, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, the most extreme, fresh, new music that is dropping every week. Jerry listens to it all somehow, and he puts it on the playlist for you to enjoy. It's available on both Apple Music and Spotify. The Brutal Awakenings playlist is what you want to be listening to. Trust me. There's just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I hate for you to miss a single thing, so sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer, killer weekend. I will be back next week with one episode on Tuesday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind Podcast.